host, Britt Dowd. In this show, our goal is to come alongside you, the lawn and landscape business owner, and bring you value in areas that are often overlooked in the green industry. We focus on leadership, communication, and strive to help you grow as a leader so that you can grow your team and your profits. We do this through interviews with other business owners, people who have won in small business in and out of our industry, as well as documenting episodes within our own company here at Green Again Lawn. That's right, we are in the ring with you every day, taking shots on the chin and swinging back even while up against the ropes. Listen in, turn it up, and we know you'll enjoy this show. Thank you for joining us. All right, guys, I want to take a moment here from our show and thank our sponsors, Intentional Growth Advisors. Have you ever thought of buying out a competitor or maybe selling your own business? I know of so many companies that either hand off their book of business for little to no money or possibly even leave money on the table. I also know of companies who jumped into a buyout situation without doing their due diligence. I actually can count five on one hand really quickly that did that. Intentional Growth Advisors can help with all of that. They also exist to help small businesses in the green industry. They offer one-on-one coaching, virtual CFO services, tax preparation, monthly consulting services to help you grow as a leader, implement new systems, and even give new data to help maximize profits. I know me personally, when I have the right data in front of me, I've been able to make good decisions. Especially this year, having good data helped me sleep at night even, knowing that we were still going to be okay. Even amidst all that's going on around us, having real data in front of me, knowing that, hey, if I make a few minor adjustments, we'll even thrive this year. So let Intentional Growth Advisors come alongside you, be that business coach, be that mentor, and help you grow and maximize your profits. Again, these guys they specialize to the green industry. And again, it's tax preparation, it's high-level CFO work, it's implementing systems, it's hands-on, one-on-one coaching. If you would like to reach out to them, they have an email, intentionalgrowthadvisors@gmail.com, or you can go ahead and click on the show notes and email them right from there, or you can DM us at Lawn Care Leaders Podcast on Instagram, or you can find us on Facebook and DM us there. Just reach out, maybe in the notes put Intentional Growth Advisors, and we'll reach back out to you and link you up with the right contact. But these guys are great. They know what they're doing, and they're here to help and serve you and your business. So we'll just we'll hop into it here. So I am here with Dan Diebel. I should say Pastor Diebel, Pastor Brian Wright. Kind of a unique conversation here. Both of these guys at one point or another have been my pastor. Pastor Diebel, you didn't know about it.
I did not know this.
Mm-hmm. So we didn't jump into it, but we were at Heartland.
And then what happened? I scared you away. I chased you out.
We loved it. We didn't want to leave. My wife grew up in this church, and we did a lot of community stuff with Foundry.
Yep.
And went Sundays and did a couple small groups with Heartland. And her parents were here, so it was all just family related.
Got it.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. We love Heartland.
I'm just saying, it's an all familiar story.
I like how it says we love Heartland, but we landed at Foundry because we had family there.
So no.
It's like, that's how we ended up at Foundry.
It's a common story in my life.
This is the basis of our relationship, Dan and I, right
here. It's a deeper love. It's a real love.
Oh, that's it is. I just want to say I'm trying to figure out how to sip my coffee with this microphone right in my face.
You just slurp it.
All right.
I don't do any editing, so.
All right.
Yeah. I mean, we just roll with it. All right. So. What I want to do, again, we've got an audience of small business owners, And I want to get your guys' perspective from a faith-based approach, both on leadership and then from you specifically. I know Brian was saying that you're getting ready to hop into the marketplace, start a new venture, so want to dabble on that. But I want to land on faith-based, not fear-based decision-making. And I also want to talk about having your work be your worship in the marketplace. So let's eventually get there, but right now, take a couple minutes, introduce yourself, whichever one of you guys want to start. Talk about where you've been, where you are, where you're going.
Yeah, well, I'm going to start with, can I still take the pastor title?
Why not?
Why not? I said a priesthood of all believers. So yeah, Brett, I'm Dan Diebel. And I had been the lead pastor at Heartland for 15 years. And just as of February 1, launched a new business called Lost Ball Consulting. So I've transitioned from Heartland and now in the total free fall of small business ownership myself. So yeah.
That's awesome. What, if you don't mind going a little deeper, you were at Heartland for 15 years. What did God put on your heart to leave there and jump into the marketplace?
Yeah, and actually I'd been at Heartland for over 20, oh, wow. But in the lead pastor position for 15. Before that, I was in the marketplace. So I was with a McDonald's franchisee group out in California. I was doing marketing for them. And then jumped over to a vendor to McDonald's doing customer loyalty programs. And that's actually what brought me from California out here, was that company got bought out by an Overland Park group. Okay. And came a little bit kicking and screaming from Santa Barbara, California, to Overland Park, Kansas. But yeah, I thought I'd be here for only 3 months before they sent me out on assignment. And that was 22 years ago. Wow. So, but yeah, so I was in business development, project management, a little bit of sales. Foundationally, I, since high school, had a sense that God was calling me to vocational ministry. But I also knew that would be the worst job in the world if God didn't really want me there. Yeah. Your kids get all jacked up. You can't watch football on Sundays. And, you know, I'd seen enough of church squabbles to go, man, unless I'm meant to be there, I'm going to go find something else. Yeah. And at the same time, particularly in college, I was mentored by some business leaders who had just a really authentic, sincere faith. And they took me under their wing. One was a corporate attorney. Another guy was a finished carpenter. Another guy was a life coach. And I got to see in their friendships, and I got to see in the impact they were having on me, that wow, to work in the marketplace, to lead companies, to be a leader in the civic and marketplace world, like you can have a lot of purpose, a lot of impact beyond just the bottom line. Yeah. So that was coded in me pretty deep early on. So, but I come out to Kansas City, this is 22 years ago, and about 2 years in or so, I start to feel that call of God saying, no, I actually really want you to jump into vocational ministry. So I did. And I did that for 20 years. The last 5 years, I began feeling these promptings, nudges, whatever you want to call them, for the marketplace again. Entrepreneurial ideas I couldn't shake. Those ideas start to get legs. Pretty soon I've got partners. Pretty soon there's business plans and pro formas. And I'm trying to figure out, okay, how do I do both? Because I loved being at Heartland. And love being a pastor, all those things, but I could not shake these kind of dreams. And, you know, there's an author named Frederick Buechner, and he talks about just listening to your life. And when I listen to my life, I go, okay, where do my free thoughts go? They go towards business. Where does my free time go? It goes towards business or other things, like I started a wiffle ball league, of all things, and it's grown over the last 5 years and really kind of blown up. And, it's listening to business podcasts or hanging out and mentoring business leaders. And I just step back and I just go, okay, there's some shifts going on in me. And I fought it because I loved what I was doing and who I got to do it with and everything at Heartland. But finally, I just kind of had to come to a surrender point and just go, I wanted to actually try to figure out how to do both. Could I both be a leader or speaker at Heartland and launch this business and do that thing? And what I realized is I was just trying to mitigate my risk, mm-hmm. and, you know, make everyone happy. And so finally realized, all right, well, I'll tell you, this is the moment. I want to hand it off to you, Brian. We had been working on a strategic plan for 18 months. It was exhausting. It was grueling, but it was really good, hard work. And this January, so we're now in just about the present. Mm-hmm. This January, we finally completed it. We went away on a 3-day kind of intensive. And third day, last hour, we get this thing finished. And it's a great plan. I mean, it's beautiful. And I couldn't see myself in it. It was just like I had blinders on. And I just realized I'm dreaming about different things, not better things, just different things yeah. now. And so I shared with the team. I had been in conversation with them for months and months, but I shared with them just kind of the final decision. It was one of the most difficult, painful, scary things I've ever had to do.
I can't imagine.
Yeah.
Especially your role there and how many people look to you and the ripple effect after you, like your leadership wake, I guess I could call it. One of the things I was thinking about, you know, in my life, I've noticed kind of what you're saying, you know, what you focus on expands. I tell my guys that all the time, but God puts a passion in our heart that we begin to focus on. Yeah. And the more we listen to God's call, listen to God's passion for our life, that's what we'll begin to expand. Yeah. And to neglect that is, yeah. Kind of a scary spot to be. The other thing that I noticed is Super Bowl Sunday or like football Sundays, you quit after we won the Super Bowl. You're like, I've had enough.
Yeah.
I've had enough.
Yeah. You know, Mahomes and I, I just can't go anymore. I can't go any further. This is it. The end of the road.
Gotta be watching.
We've reached it. Oh yeah.
No more recorded right. games. All right. Pastor Brian Wright.
Yeah, man.
Hand the ball off to you.
My quick backstory. I grew up on a farm and a ranch, so farm boy, country boy for sure, and with a great family that kind of instilled a high work ethic, work value for us. And my dad gave us great opportunities, we'll say, to learn work ethic. And so he set me up with these little miniature businesses, bought me a chainsaw. We did firewood stuff. We did tree digging in Colorado. We lived up in the high mountains of Colorado, and we'd started this little nursery supply business, and we would go down to Denver and sell all of this stuff.
Nice.
And so it was so fun. My dad's a great entrepreneur, excellent businessman. One of those, you know, those farm guys that's got that aw shucks thing going, mm-hmm. but then you spend some time with them and you're like, you're just pretty freaking sharp, aren't you? You know, it takes a while to figure that out.
Yeah.
And like any kid, it took me a while to figure that out too. And so, but then I ended up going into ministry and wasn't prepared for that, or was barely educated for it.
Yeah.
I went to Manhattan Christian College after I had failed out of another fine university, Colorado State University.
Okay.
And while I was there, I still didn't know what I wanted to do, but I got ready to graduate, and a buddy of mine said, have you ever heard of sports ministry? And I was like, that's a thing? Like, you can get paid to do sports? And so I'm like, I'm all about that. So yeah. I took a job at a church doing sports ministry. It was a big church, which meant that it had lots of opportunities and resources. And so I basically got a role like an athletic director. We ran sports leagues for soccer, for basketball, baseball, youth sports, trips to West Virginia to go rafting. And I mean, it's like, I'm not sure why I left that job, to be honest. I got paid to play. And, but then God kind of nudged me and my wife to consider ministry in a different way and invited us into kind of more of a missional approach. And so I joined a team that did more international outreach. And that really opened up for me. I figured out like where my calling, my sweet spot, what energizes me was. I found that at that time. And so you could probably make the case for that's what I've done ever since then. That's like awesome. Anything I put my hands on now, I have kind of this missional mindset for it. How can we deploy it? How can we empower other people? And so, awesome. And Dan and I's relationship started through a thing called What If the Church? Yeah. Our church got to come over to Heartland's campus and pray for them. And our team just walked around. And while we were walking around over there, we were getting ready to leave. And Dan poked his head out of the office to see who these people were and why they were in the building, probably, and see if we'd been through background checks. I'm sure all of those things. And then
see if they had protest signs they were carrying. Are they from Topeka by chance? Or
we're not that church. And that led to
the bus
to,
you stepped off of it, like gave it away. They're like, oh boy.
That led to a conversation. We ended up, Dan said, well, let's follow up. Let's get to know each other. And so we had lunch at Papakino's in downtown OP, which isn't even there anymore. So that was a wasted plug right there. But that was a fun meeting and just started dreaming about the question was, what if?
Yeah.
So that's kind of the background of my story. And I'm lead pastor here now at Foundry Church. And I would call us a missional more than attractional kind of church, although we're kind of both of those things. We care about, hey, come and see. And we also care deeply about go and be the church.
Awesome.
And Brian has, and Foundry has, the church, just this beautiful heart to see the city flourish. And that's something I've always been drawn to who Brian is. And that's reflected in the culture at Foundry is how do we serve the city in which we've been placed?
Yeah.
I appreciate that, man. Yep. That's important for the church.
Yep. A lot of good people at Foundry.
Absolutely.
A lot of people that care deeply about the community and about living out their faith. Mm-hmm. I have been a part of a lot of churches because of my background moving around, but have never seen a church rally around every single member of the family. That was one of the big draws, you know, with the Shacklets.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, you know, if I just was like, I can't imagine, like, it just blew my mind. The amount of people that were rallying around one individual, one family. And that's for everything. That's if somebody needs their house painted or if that's somebody struggling financially.
That is an incredible story. Like, for anybody that's listening that may not know that story, there was this family had tragic loss of a child, and it was just a sad situation. And the church just, like, showed up for them in a million ways, helping at their home. It's a long story. We don't have time for all the details, but showing up at the hospital, coming alongside their kids. And the amazing thing was that was a family that was already on mission to start with. That's part of what was happening. That was a family that was already serving and really interested in the flourishing of other people around them. So when there was a need, people were like, I'm all in. Yeah. The church didn't even have to rally people. It was like a line. How can I help? How can I serve? Yep. So I appreciate that's cool that you got to see all that and experience that.
Yeah, that was great. And not to get you on too high of a horse, but I also love, I love the authenticity of everybody. Everybody's just super genuine. Everybody's themselves. Yeah. And it's relationship with one another, relationship with God. Outside of that, you know, nothing else matters. So let's do this. Let's go back to, if you guys don't mind, faith, not fear-based decision-making. Every single person has been affected by COVID in one way or another, no matter what your stance is on it. I want to know where you guys are with the church, with your families, and as much as possible, give us biblical principles, some leadership and business advice rooted in biblical principles around faith-based, not fear-based decision-making.
That is a meaty question right there.
Let's chew on it.
Faith versus fear. I can go first with just a confession. How about that? So, like, for me, in this environment, in the COVID environment and things that have happened, I have personally struggled to kind of have compassion for people that are living in the fear place. I'm just not wired like that, but I have come to understand how important that is. I've come to understand how it's so valuable. We have to recognize that those fears are real for people. That is a real danger, and they're processing that. And so I've had to learn that although I don't necessarily feel the fear of the disease or even the consequences, you know, as a Christ follower, I don't even really fear death, but I have to come to understand that there are a lot of people that have very real fears and it's affecting them. And part of the role for the church is to accept that and to provide comfort. You can't shame people into feeling better. You know, it's taken the church a long time to learn that. Maybe we still haven't learned that. You know, with whatever church you come from, you're like, yeah, that's true. But, you know, like, you can't shame people into being comforted. Yeah. And so we don't have a lot of fear in terms of our team. Like, we're ready to get back. We're ready for reopening. One of my bucket list items has been to spend a night in jail. Mm-hmm. And surprisingly hasn't happened yet. But I was
I can help with that.
I was really hopeful that maybe with COVID we would get back at it and they're like, pastor's thrown in jail because they opened church too soon. But it doesn't look like it's going to happen. Oh, so that,
it's not too late.
I don't know if that answers your question, but
yeah.
Gives you some framework good. Of where we are anyway.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. There's a great book. I'm trying to remember the title, but it's one of the most intense books I've read about war. And the opening quote goes something like this. It's not a question of fear. What happens between a man's own brain and thoughts is his own business. Cowardice is what we're really talking about here. Mm-hmm. And that reminds me of the difference between faith and fear, or the similarities, because I like to tell people all the time, there is a fear component in faith. There always is. Mm-hmm. And actually, it takes great faith to step out though you're afraid. And from a scriptural perspective, how many times is it, and they were afraid, and you know, they were frightened, don't be frightened, you know, and all of the encounters, all of those moments, fear is part of the faith enterprise.
Yeah.
So I'd be cautious in this conversation. I want to be careful to not bifurcate those two things and villainize fear.
Yeah.
Because it's part of our human reaction. It's part of how God's wired us up from a survival standpoint. Yeah. You know, one of the core instincts is you know, flight, fight, or freeze.
Yeah.
And that's for our own survival. Yeah.
The guy that was scared in the beginning was the one who stayed alive.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I think fear has its place in the marketplace. It has its place because it's the thing we've been in this conversation about pivoting. It's the thing that actually is the great impetus for us to say, okay, something's at risk here. Mm-hmm. Now, how are we going to pivot into a new reality? Yeah. So fear can really be something I think that we're made for and that God wants to leverage for great change.
Yeah.
And I think in the Christian world, it can be kind of villainized. And to what you were saying, Brian, it can have this sense of shame around it. But if the question becomes, how do I not get stuck in a place of fear?
Yeah. How do you not make a decision out of fear?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think the first thing is we have to be okay being afraid. Mm-hmm. I think just to live in denial of I'm not supposed to be afraid. I'm a tough leader or whatever. It's like, no, it's freaky out there mm-hmm. right now. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if it was you and me, Brian, we were on the phone and yesterday or so, I can't remember who it was, but we were, I was talking to somebody and they're like, should, you know, I think we'll be okay. Should a calamity happen? And I looked at him and said, this is a calamity. What do you mean? You know? So all that to say, I think we just have to, whatever it is, we have to name it.
Yeah.
We can't move beyond it unless, and we can't deny it.
Yeah.
And we can't try to muscle up or be, you know, by contrivance somehow think we're impervious to it. You go, no, this is a frightful time.
Yeah.
Now, what will I do with it? And to me, that's where that immediate assessment of what is the foundation beneath my feet? Because mm-hmm. when I'm afraid, where do I go to? What do I go to?
Yeah.
Who do I go to?
Yeah.
And a phrase for me, this is switching metaphors a little bit, but ever since COVID hit, I've just had this phrase of, I want to draw from the deepest well. I want to draw from the deepest well. And it's had this anchoring effect on me. And I look around at culture. Everyone's talking about pivoting, right? It's the buzzword and everything. And people are kind of talking a big game about that, but if all I can draw on in these times is panic swiping my news feeds or watching Tiger King. Yeah. I'm not drawing from a very deep well. Yeah. I see a lot of people going outside in nature. That's certainly a beautiful anchor point for me. I'm just like, I'm enjoying the birds unlike ever before in my life. Just hearing their sounds, watching them, like, I think I'm becoming old because I'm getting into birds, you know? But there's something the simplicity of and the complexity and the beauty of nature is reminding me that there's some larger story in all of this. But it can't just be nature by itself. Yeah. It has to be something deeper than that. And so what is the deepest well? And what's interesting about water and well metaphor, where that's developed for me. So here's the sermon. Don't let me go long.
Let's hear it. I'm loving it.
So I started thinking about what draws down to the deepest well. Well, grapes do that in a vineyard. And I remember hearing one time that in severe drought, grapes actually do really well. I would have thought it would have killed the grapes and killed the wine industry, et cetera. It's hard, but what happens is those roots of the vines, they have to push that much further down in deep into the earth to find that deepest well of water. Wow. And what it creates is what they call a tough grape or a resilient grape. Mm-hmm. Because it's really had to work on its own, and it comes out in the tannins, and it comes out in the texture, and it comes out in the flavor in the wine later. And so for me, that began to develop this kind of four-part little step of how do I navigate this? Well, one, what's my deepest well? Two, in all of the pivoting and all of the now everyone feeling upside down, what's my trellis that I'm going to structure these things around? And how will things organically grow in a healthy and a natural way? And I've got to change some rhythms. I've got to put in some new disciplines. I've got to let go of old ones. And so that's a lot of the pivoting. But I know that I need new forms and structures right now that's going to help me through that.
Wow.
And the third part is grape stomping. And, you know, this is how my brain works, guys. I'm sorry. but we need to be grateful in moments. We need to see where the harvest is now and not operate from a spirit of scarcity, but abundance. And we need to have somehow in the social distancing world the ability to come together and celebrate and be grateful together. And that's the beauty of a grape stomp. You know, it used to serve purpose back in the day, but now it's a beautiful way to come together and celebrate all that is good. And we need that. And we're not going to get that too many places. Wow. And the fourth stop along the way, and I'll stop here, is what's called yard wine. And this comes from my parents' friends, dear friends, actually my dad's old business partner, 20-ish years ago, where they developed this thing called yard wine. And here's how it started. So think 30 years ago is a little bit more, traditional models of how home looked, but it was a Friday afternoon about 4:30, and dad hadn't come home yet. He was a little late from the office, and mom is just at her wits' ends with the two little boys that are driving her crazy. Mm-hmm. She sends them out in the front yard. She goes, go play in the street, kids, kind of thing. Yeah. She grabs a lawn chair, a bottle of wine, one glass, and she just sits in the driveway waiting for her husband to come home, right? Yeah. And she's just catatonic. Well, around 5 o'clock, that old couple with the dog that always walks their dog at 5 o'clock, for the first time ever, they stop and they say hello. And they start to say, what are you doing? And the questions. And before you know it, they're sitting down. They pulled up an old paint can, flipped it over. They're sitting down. And then the single guy that walks, and rides his bike, he stops. And pretty soon, there's like 12 or 15 people all gathered in this front yard. Meanwhile, the mom, as she's fetching more glasses, another bottle, and what developed for them was this spontaneous breakout of community that took no planning, that took no organization. What it took was a beat up lawn chair, one bottle of wine. And what developed from there was like, they actually made a little flag. This is their only level of organization. They made a flag, and they'd put it in their front yard, and it just said yard wine. And everyone knew, it's on. I'm going to bring my chair. I'm going to bring my bottle. I'm going to bring my glass. And that's it. You don't have to coordinate the potluck. You don't have to clean up. Nobody goes inside the house. But it was this really nimble, free, low-maintenance way to draw people together. And it's really, for me, a picture of saying, how do we serve those around us? Yeah. How do we draw people together? Yeah. If I'm drawing from the deepest well, and I'm building healthy trellises upon which I can grow in this environment, everyone can grow in this environment. And if I have a spirit of gratitude and abundance, not of scarcity, then there's going to be an overflow into drawing other people together.
Wow. Dude, wow. That's awesome. Leave it to that's California really... guy to weave wine into the story. Like, we had the same thing. We had yard wine only. Yeah. Well, it was in a mason jar, and we called it moonshine.
You grew up in Kentucky? Where was this?
Well, I spent some time in Kentucky. This was in the mountains of Colorado. Ours was more on the tailgate of a pickup.
But there you go.
Same thing happened. People showed up. Lots of community, all that kind of stuff. So
yeah.
I love what Dan's saying. You know, the only thing I would give into that as well is, like, you know, we see in Scripture this idea. There's 360-plus times that the phrase "do not be afraid" shows up.
Yeah.
And I think it's perfect what we're talking about here right now. You could look at that two ways. You could look at that like, oh my gosh, like, come on, buck up.
Right.
You know, feel the challenge.
Right.
Do not be afraid. Or you could also realize that God, in caring for his people, realized there was so much fear that over and over again he brought comfort, and he knew. He was like, hey, I want to help you through this fear.
That's good.
I would say in my own life, that's happening exactly like that right now.
Yeah.
I've never felt more alive and never felt more afraid than right now.
Yeah.
And I've never felt more close to God than in this jump out of the airplane moment that my family, and I've never felt closer to my wife because we're in this free fall together with the Lord.
Yeah, yeah. It's you, her, and God in it together. That is... I mean, that was a hunk of meat that I threw at you guys, because you just dropped some bombs on me. I'm trying to see how can I mean, there's no possible way to wrap it up, but maybe a couple themes. Like, it seems like the fear is more refining, you know, refining through fire.
Yeah.
Fear's not bad.
Right.
It's going to be there. It's more of, hey, this is scary. It's in front of me. Do we knock it over, go around it, go through it?
Yeah.
Jump over it, and in that process, also, if I can share just maybe a couple little tidbits, I'll be really brief because I want to pitch it back to you guys, because this is
your
gold.
Podcast.
Yeah,
you do whatever you want.
I love it. I love it.
Brian would say, you're the Howard Stern. his favorite.
His go to.
You know, his go to guy. Yeah,
these headphones, this environment, so perfect.
So. It just reminded me of, I just feel like every time in my life that I try to take that next big step in business or next big step in my personal life, when we were at Heartland, actually, we got the call not to adopt, but to help a birth mom who was in a struggling relationship. We helped her, and there was just so much that was built in our heart out of that. But there was a ton of fear.
Yeah.
And God put me in a position. I had all my ducks in a row financially. My wife and I were ready for a kid. We had all the support around us, but we were completely stripped of all of that about 2 to 3 days before we found out we were going to be having this child.
No way.
Yeah. And there's a lot of stuff that goes into it.
Yeah.
Birth mom was not a citizen,
okay.
No insurance, pregnancy stuff going on in the background. And so the finances, out the window. You can be financially ready, but if there's struggles and no insurance in place, no COBRA. So it was like finances off the table. The only thing, and I don't want to bore you guys with the list of 15 things that went wrong, because that was all the fear. But it put me in a position to where I only could rely on God.
Right.
And I literally couldn't lean on my wife. I couldn't lean on my best friend, on my finances. It was just strictly God. Same thing happens to me in business. Every time I think that I'm ready, especially this year, it's like God reminds me, hey, you're in this with me. And I think I just need to do a better job of realizing maybe as I grow, that I want God to get the glory, because it's very easy for me to make shifts and pivot and go around fear and forget that it's God who has blessed me. It's God who is refining me in the process. And I just wanted to share that, because as you guys were talking about that stuff, it just kind of glared out to me that I do a poor job of remembering who I stand on. And I wish I didn't have to get to that point to remember it, but I feel like I have at least the last two times.
Well, I love what you said there. And I'm going to forget exactly how you said it, but what it just formed for me was that fear is a formative part of our journey.
Yeah.
And I would also liken it this way. Sometimes fear is the feeling of faith. Mm-hmm. And God brings peace all at the same time.
Yeah.
I think that's also what you're talking about.
Oh, absolutely. You know? I mean, it talks about in Scripture, it talks about the relationship begins with this healthy fear of God.
Right.
You understand this powerful entity, frightening entity, with what he has available to him.
Yeah.
So there is a healthy fear about him, which is pretty similar to respect,
right,
which leads you to awe. And so we should never lose that fear. That it's not a fear if he's going to do something that hurts me. Yeah. It's just this like respect of what's going on. I remember, I got one quick story. I remember when I was about 19 years old, I thought I was indestructible. My dad sent me out, take care of these cattle, riding horseback. I was a cowboy, not a California guy. And so, but I was a reluctant cowboy.
But you were not
cowboy.
Mutually exclusive.
I was a reluctant cowboy. Anyway, you know how you are at that age. I'm out in the field and up in the mountains, High Mountains in Colorado. We lived about 9,600 feet, so way up in the mountains. Wow. And been through all kinds of storms. I was right down in the pasture, and a storm rolled in the afternoon. Happens all the time in Colorado. Mm-hmm. Lightning storm broke out. Still, indestructible. I'm riding through this lightning storm. Then there's a bolt of lightning that strikes about 4 feet away from me. Almost knocked me and my horse down. And in that moment, I was not indestructible anymore. In that moment, I was scared to death. Mm-hmm. And that's my whole perspective changed. How quickly can I get to the truck and the trailer?
Yeah.
And I think back on that in terms of, like, that's a good fear. Like, if I didn't have a fear of that kind of power, that would not be a good respect for nature or for God. Mm. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, That's good.
Yeah, you know, when I started this company February 1st, you know, and here we are May 7th, whatever it is. So February was pretty awesome, especially as I look back on it now, you know. It's like, holy cow, this is all going to work. And then March 15th or whatever hits, holy cow, I think we're in trouble, you know, and all of this.
From we won the Super Bowl to we may never play football again.
Oh, like, dude.
From February to March.
I was, I know. Isn't that crazy? Oh, man.
And do you mind giving like a brief description of the business you're in?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So the company's called Lost Ball Consulting. Okay. And there are three main areas. One is activation, marketing, engagement, marketing. But really working with marketplace leaders in what I describe as personal acumen, leadership advance, and cultural avalanche. So we do that in cohort groups, kind of peer-to-peer, one-on-one, and then also within organizations, and help them work towards this idea that actually relationships from a business perspective are the most profitable asset that you have. Mm-hmm. Actually, people aren't. The relationships between people. Because you can have super talented people, but if you don't get the relationships right, gets wonky fast, the sideways energy that occurs, the drag on the organization, and all the things that go with that. But if you can begin to foster thriving relationships within your organization and get that avalanche of healthy, right relating going, man, the amount of productivity to profitability is huge. Yeah. So work really on that soft skills space. I'm developing that in the leaders. It could be a C-suite leader, could be a small business owner, could be a developing leader, could be a team of leaders within an organization, or cross-disciplinary from different sectors coming together in a cohort, if that makes sense. And then lastly, the third bucket is communication coaching. So I get to do that with the Foundry crew, have a blast just helping hone and craft as a communicator and a message, something that's memorable and meaningful and that sticks with great echo.
Awesome.
And so, if I could throw a plug for Dan and what he does.
Oh.
He just offered a workshop. We called it a pop-up workshop. Or he offered it called Pivot Towards Your Priorities, or pivot. Like wherever you're right now, everybody's had to pivot. You know, if you have a catering company, you went from corporate meals to home delivery like that. You had to pivot. And so how do you do that? How do you go through a process where you kind of examine what's going on, put new plans in place, implement them, hold yourself and others accountable? And so this workshop around the pivot tool that I sat in on, fantastic. Great for anybody in any space, whether you're doing corporate stuff, whether you have a small business, whether you're doing some kind of ministry of some kind, to just go through this process of observing this, discussing, reflecting on it, putting a plan of action together, holding accountability to it, and coming full circle with that. It's fantastic. So if that would just maybe give somebody maybe kind of a little micro picture of just one of the little things that happens inside Lost Ball, I totally recommend it. It was fantastic.
Awesome. Thanks. That's awesome. And where, if they're interested in that, where can they find?
Yeah, you can just go to lostballconsulting.com.
Lostballconsulting.com.
Yeah.
Hashtag non-sponsored.
Dan has a baseball background. It might be worth it to say what the heck lost ball means.
You mean it's not just naturally obvious to you? Well, my passion is wiffle ball, so it harkens back to that day when you had a simple summer day, and your buddies come over, they drop their bikes in the front lawn, you head out into the backyard, you're ready to play some wiffle ball or whatever the sport might be, and you got one ball. You know, and this is kind of back in the day where you had just one ball and it just had duct tape on it and the whole thing. There were no shields. There were no academy sports, you know, where you had buckets of these things.
Sandlot is coming
it was
to mind.
Sandlot,
exactly,
right?
Exactly.
And somebody hits it over the wrong fence and it's in the neighbor's Cujo's dog clutches, or it's up on the third roof gutter. And so you got to go, okay, everything stops until we get that ball, and we can't play until we get that ball. So it's going to take some courage. Who's going to be the one to climb over that fence? It's going to take some teamwork. All right, I'm going to get on your shoulders, and you're going to throw a piece of meat over, you know, or it's going to take a little bit of, you know, some, I don't know, a little shenanigans to make sure mom doesn't look out the window when you're trying to climb up to the third story roof, right?
Yeah.
So it's going to take all those kinds of things, courage, teamwork, because when you lose the ball, the game stops.
Yeah.
And so the question is, what's your ball?
Yeah.
And the ball is the thing that's your deep purpose. It's the thing that it's your North Star. It's the thing that gets you up in the morning and sometimes keeps you up at night, because it's that deep passion. And if we can unlock that, whether it's through communication, if we can unlock that, whether it's in your leadership advance, that's what Lost Ball is about.
I love it. I love it. So you're kind of honing in on communication and then emotional intelligence.
Yeah,
for
call
leaders.
It people intelligence.
People
actually.
Intelligence.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds better. People intelligence.
I mean,
which is it's hard. I've seen just in a few companies that I've talked to here locally, oftentimes that's what's holding the manager back from becoming the general manager, or you know, that key leader from getting that next promotion, or me as a business owner. That's where all my growth is found. It's all in people. We can sell as much as we possibly can, but if those key relationships aren't in place, you're going to struggle. How are we doing on time here?
Doing good.
You're doing good.
Got a few more minutes for sure.
All right. So if it's okay, off of kind of what you just brought up, I would love to dive into, if we've got enough time for it, I would like to tackle the, you said people intelligence.
Yeah.
Do you have any practical steps for somebody who may be data-driven, detail-oriented? He is that micromanager, and he is really great at management. But there's more to leadership than just management. I'm picturing kind of somebody that's pushing people.
Right.
But we need a leader who, when they look behind them, there's other people following them.
Yeah.
And then I would love for you to address, I talked about, I think, four or five months ago, I just noticed you and Foundry do a really good job of giving people a lot of responsibilities, and not necessarily just delegating it to them, but really putting them in a position to just kind of take the ball and run with it. And if they fail, you do a good job of following up and course correcting without damaging feedback.
Dude, that's great to hear.
Which I've personally given a lot of damaging feedback. I'm like, oh, you struggled there. Oh, yeah. You failed here, and here. Go do it better. So I would love after we talk about personal intelligence, if you would touch on that.
Well, part of that is ability for communication one to another. It's just such a huge part. So I'll talk us through a tool. You might be familiar with this, Brian. But I think what I hear you saying about the culture Brian's created here at Foundry is it's an empowered culture.
Yeah.
And that's what we want to see in every culture is people know who they are, they know where they fit, they know what their job is, and they're given the freedom and the releasing to go do it within the bounds of accountability. Yeah. And oftentimes one of the struggles, and as you kind of, you said, okay, here's somebody that, as I deciphered it, here's somebody that was really good at whether it was their entry-level job or something, you know, they got trained in college and now they're practicing. So let's say it's an engineering firm. Mm-hmm. One of the greatest challenges for an engineering firm is a great engineer doesn't necessarily translate to a great manager of people.
Yeah.
And this is true in law firms. This is true in just about any sector of industry. What got you to the place of promotion is actually that thing that can keep you from the ability to promote others and develop others. Yeah. So just one tool is, as you were describing your experience at Foundry, is what we call support and challenge. The ability to come to the people that you invest in, and let's say they're your direct reports or whatever, and give them both support and challenge. And if you can picture a four-square matrix, I'm a big fan of four-square matrix.
Oh, yeah. I remember your whiteboard.
Oh, yeah. Just picture the whiteboard in your head. Exactly. Right? People need to know that they matter and that they have value regardless of their performance. That's the support piece. They need to know that their voice matters. They need to know that they are cared for.
Yeah.
Conversely, they need to be challenged to their highest capacity and potential, and niceties won't get them there.
Yeah.
That's the challenge piece. And some of us, we just need to know we're either good at one or the other. Rarely are we at both. As an aside, a little plug for Jesus, you read through the documentaries of Jesus' life through what's called the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, you'll see that Jesus did support and challenge masterfully. Just when he thought he was going to bring a moment of support and comfort, he'd be like, bam! And just when you're like, I thought he'd bring challenge, he brings this beautiful sense of grace, forgiveness, support, right? Yeah. And what he was doing was he was empowering these 12 guys, band of women around them, to go change the world. And they did.
Wow.
They did. So let's just kind of picture a four-square matrix. At the top would be support. To the far right would be challenge. Let's say you're the type of leader where you like to put your arm around, proverbially speaking, one of your staff members and just tell them the good news.
Yeah.
All you do is you give them the good news. Well, you're creating a cozy culture that leads ultimately to an entitlement people. In family terms, we'd call that the spoiled quadrant.
Yeah.
Right? And then you're going to start dealing with all sorts of HR issues of, my pay is not high enough, I'm not getting enough attention, and you know, all of these kinds of things. Conversely, when all that you bring is a challenge, and that person does not feel secure in their standing with you, they don't feel seen, they don't feel safe, they don't feel supported, but you're constantly saying, do better. How many of us have grown up in environments where that's all we heard from dad or from mom? Do more, do this, you're never doing enough. And the only way you'll earn my approval is by doing the next thing, not for what you just did. And there's a lot of corporate and small business cultures that live in that. And I would say predominantly probably because most of your listeners are entrepreneurial.
Yeah.
They're apostolic, they're pioneers.
Yeah.
They're gonna probably fall more in that challenge. They like to be challenged. They like a challenge, and they want to constantly go after the next thing and forgetting to celebrate the now thing.
Yeah.
And what that creates is a stressed culture and I never measure up culture, which leads to a really core kind of psychological word, which is shame.
Yeah.
I'm not enough, or I've done a bad thing. So those would be the kind of the spoiled culture, the cozy culture,
yeah.
where that's defined as being overly nice all the time, but they're not addressing real issues. They're not telling the hard truth. There's not a lot of accountability or overly stressed where I can never do enough.
Yeah.
Now think about your favorite coach that you ever played for. Think about the best teacher that you've ever had mm-hmm. or professor. And I would pretty much bet that it was someone that you felt secure with. You knew they loved you no matter what, but man, they pissed you off because they challenged you and your potential mm-hmm. to higher places. So that's, if you go up to the right quadrant, that's the empowerment. That's where you're empowered. If you go to the bottom left, by the way, that you're just bored, you're checked out, you've been abandoned.
Yeah.
And there are some cultures like that too.
Yep.
And interestingly, Britt, that's the orphan culture is in the bored category where you're neither supported nor challenged, you're ignored. And I'm an adoptive dad too.
Okay.
And so I know that space, yeah. that space well.
Yeah.
So for companies to first for the leader to say, I know that I set culture. Yeah. Where is my default?
Yeah.
And sometimes it looks different in different environments.
Yeah.
Under different circumstances. Sometimes it looks different when I'm under stress.
Mm-hmm. You have to be self-aware enough.
That's where the personal acumen comes in.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you've got to have good mentors in place around
yes.
you.
Yes.
To be able to tell you those hard truths.
Totally.
Have you guys by chance read Jocko Willink, Extreme Ownership or
no.
Dichotomy? He just came out with a book, Jocko Willink and Leif Babin, mm. with the Dichotomy of Leadership.
Mm.
And it talks exactly about this,
mm.
the balance of too much challenge
yep.
and too much friendship.
Yeah.
And how you have to most of the time live in the middle.
Right.
But often like you're back and forth. And
right.
if you're ever too far one way, it filters through the entire company.
Exactly right.
And he was a general, where were they at? Ramadi was where they were at.
Wow.
And so if you guys haven't listened to some of his books,
awesome.
It's a really good audible because they both, yeah. they read it.
Huh.
And it applies military strategy, what they learned, what they went through, applications to business as well.
Will you post that on this podcast in
yeah,
the notes
I'll,
or something
I'll
like that?
I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, yep, please yep. do.
It'll be right there with Lost Ball Consulting.
Come on.
Come on. Let me see it. No, that's really good. I fall too much towards the friendship side. What's weird is I'm very motivated and driven,
yeah.
but I almost feel like since I'm in a lawn care industry and everybody complains about hiring mm-hmm. and that's my main struggle, I default to have a good culture, be their friend, make yeah. it enjoyable.
Yeah.
So,
you know, it's so interesting because this is a simple tool, but you can drill down so deeply. So I was coaching a guy yesterday on a call and I said, what do you think you are? He said, I'm on the friendship side. I said, okay. He goes, but in my head, I'm on the challenge side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was like, I can relate with that. Mm-hmm. And I said, I wonder what would happen if you asked this particular staff member you're having a problem with, what he experiences of you. Because out of your mouth, you're saying support words, but inside in your spirit, you have challenge thoughts. Mm-hmm. So what's actually translating? And so that's what I encouraged him. I said, just go and ask an open-ended question like, from our conversation yesterday, what was your experience of me? Now, I don't know too many leaders that would actually do that. That's opening yourself up, isn't it? But that's mm-hmm. a servant leader. Mm-hmm. And that's giving you're inviting conversation. He texted me back later yesterday afternoon. He said, I asked that question and the floodgates opened. Mm-hmm. One of the things we don't realize, here's another like communication tool, is what I just call the volume index, which is I might say something I think is at a 3 on the 1 to 10 scale of volume. Mm-hmm. It's being heard at an 8 or 9 mm-hmm. because I don't have my own sense of, I don't have my attunement calibrated in my ears.
Yeah.
Neither does the other person. So I also have to realize they've got their own incapacity to hear at the accurate volume level. They might have a lot of shame. They might have a lot of fear. It's all going to be heightened and skewed.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's perfect. And leaders have to recognize that their words carry more weight. Mm.
Yeah.
You know, a leader yeah. that gives one critical feedback, that weighs a ton more than a friend or companion or cohort that might mention something critical. And so we actually talk about the 3-to-1 ratio. Yeah. Like leaders have to think about this ratio, this currency exchange. For every one negative, it takes about 3 positives to counter that. Mm-hmm. I actually read some research the other day, and they proposed that it's 6-to-1, that it takes 6 positives to counter with the effects of one negative.
I'm sure that was a millennial case study.
That's great. Was that Gottman? I'm curious.
It was Gottman, actually.
Yeah.
Because we were going through
the stuff. Yeah, because that applies in marriage.
Wow. Yeah, that's where we heard it. It was at a marriage workshop that we were at. So,
right.
Yeah. And then, you know, just
I need to tell my wife that then. I mean, she's got to start
working on your list.
To take off on that, like just to be right where Dan was leaving off right there, you know, Christ describes his leadership style. Yeah. And he says, I came not to be served, but to serve. And he sets up this paradigm that's not easy, not accessible for us as leaders, but is a much better, more productive, and more beautiful paradigm. We tend to want to be the served leader. Mm. We've been given a vision. Mm. We've been given this ability to chase it down. We tend, and to be honest, a lot of times the corporate and the business world has given us a picture of the served leader by creating org charts that have us at the top. And everyone that flows down out of that. And nothing wrong with that image, but it reinforces the idea of everybody in my organization is here to serve this mission of which I protect. That's not really what Christ said. Christ said, I came not to be served, not to have a whole bunch of people that are all going into one pointed place with me at the lead. He said, instead, the paradigm is to be a servant leader. And so I should empower people. I should give them authority. I should help them be clear on their assignment to accomplish the mission we're on, but flip that chart upside down so that that pyramid, that triangle actually starts with me with the leader at the bottom, clear vision around the mission and the goals, but then a lot of empowerment or authority given as long as they understand, you know, the assignment that they have. Mm-hmm. An organization like that now is unlimited in where it can go. I mean, just imagine those two different things. One, there's a single point we got to go down this one narrow path versus an organization that's flipped upside down, and now it goes out in limitless directions. The more people we empower and the more they empower, the reach of this mission is now unlimited and grows exponentially instead of in a linear fashion. That's why Christ said, you know, that this is the better way. Yeah. He wasn't giving in on the mission. The mission was still the mission. Yeah. He was clear about that.
Yeah.
But he was approaching the people that he invited in to this to say, we have to think about being servant leaders that empower people and are able to go out and serve those around them and give them the authority to do it.
To do so. Wow. Yeah, that's really good. If I can speak for myself and probably our listeners, they're picturing all of that and they're thinking, yeah, that makes sense. But I think maybe I'm just picturing you flip it, but I think we all say, well, we need to remove ego for that to happen. Mm. But I think that's harder said than done. Maybe if somebody's not ego driven, there's still something innate in us that wants to be the guy. Or even when we say, I'm going to delegate, I'm going to take these basic tasks off my plate and focus on the vision, you know? I'm now designing my future instead of deciding. That's harder said than done because we want to be needed. Mm-hmm. How do you do that? I mean, I think, doesn't your tagline say spiritual janitor or something?
Spiritual janitor is what I like to put on the business cards. And so versus and lead pastor.
That's
so
awesome. And it immediately gives me a visual, but how do you actually live that out?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I just want to say it is awesome, and it is true.
Yeah,
which would be very different than boy, that sounds really good, but that's not actually how it's happening. Yeah. But I just want to say, as Brian's friend, he is both lead pastor and spiritual janitor.
Well, and how do you balance that?
Well, I am an arrogant SOB deep down to the core.
Yeah, yeah.
So as much as I appreciate like what you guys are offering me, I'll tell you the origin of choosing that title was I needed a tool that would keep me humble and keep me focused because I'm not that way. And so when I took a look at this, first of all, I go into scripture and the prophets in the Old Testament, when they were given the choice of whatever title they could have for themselves, they said servant of the Most High God. I was like, the prophets chose the title of servant of the Most High God. They had this access from God. They had this vision. They had mission. And they said that they were servant of the Most High God. I wonder why that was. Maybe it was because they also needed to choose a title to remind them to be humble. And so I was like, if they did that, I need to do this. I need to choose a title that will remind myself, forget about anybody else around me, but will remind me that I need to stay in a position where servant and servant leadership is more important than being served leader. So that's kind of, it's just kind of for my own accountability and therapeutic practices that I choose to be spiritual. And it's a fun conversation starter. Yeah. People are like, what does that mean? And I'm like, wow, there's this really cool word in the New Testament called doulos, the servant. And that's what I want to be as a servant.
Awesome.
We talk about all of that, you know. So that's I can, if we got just a second, I can offer one thing I think might help on a practical level, or you can just see if it will help. But in working with people and helping launch them into doing things that matter to your mission, we won't go into all this, but there's two aspects. There's personal mission and corporate mission or community mission. Your company, Green Again, has a corporate mission. You need to do some things. And people need to be on track if they're part of that. But at the same time, your people have personal mission too. Mm-hmm. You have personal mission. And finding a way to embrace that, to be clear of this is what our corporate mission is. This is what we have to all do together. Although I want to value what your personal mission is too. It may or may not fit in to our corporate mission. It doesn't mean I can't value you or even encourage you or offer you a space to develop your personal mission. And that clarification is really helpful for leaders. It solves so much potential conflict to be able to separate for somebody. That's your personal mission. We'd love for you to explore that. This, however, is our community mission or our corporate mission. And so here's a tool that we've used over time, kind of developed. You just imagine a wheel with four spokes on it, right? Mm-hmm. And so in the center of it, you have mission. So leaders have to be clear about what our mission is. And that's the center of all of this. Then you have these four spokes and they're in tension with each other. And this is where the four practical pieces come in. When you're coaching somebody and you're trying to get them to do their very best, you have this tension all of the time between different points on here. And if we're talking about a bicycle wheel, there's a great term called truing the wheel. If you're a cyclist, you have to tighten this spoke, loosen this spoke, and you're constantly truing the wheel to get the right tension. And leadership is like that all the time. Mm. Well, here's the four things. You have to be clear in assignment. Your people have to know what the assignment is that they're given. Job descriptions, clear expectation. The tension in giving assignment is authority. That's on the other side. So they've been given an assignment. Do we give them the authority to accomplish this assignment? You send one of your what'd you call them? Your turf
route managers.
Yeah. Your what?
Turf route managers.
Turf route managers. Yes, the TRMs. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you send these guys out, and they have to do this, right? They have to know their assignment, and you've given them a tremendous amount of authority. They're driving a vehicle for you. They're interacting with a client for you. They're choosing the application on the yard that day. They have to be given the authority to do that. But then there's these, but you're always in tension, right? How much mm-hmm. authority do I give them? Mm-hmm. How much is the assignment? The other two spokes on the wheel are appreciation and accountability. That's part of what we were talking about earlier. People need to know that they're appreciated, and that really just comes down to value. You know, knowing how to say you value, your opinion is valuable. As a person, I value you. And what's in tension with that on the other side is the accountability. Like, okay, we didn't get to the places we needed to get to today. Why not? Mm-hmm. Where's the issue? What can we tweak? What barriers can we take out? What was your responsibility in this? And so I found that, like, seeing this as a servant leadership paradigm is super helpful. And you never get finished. Mm-hmm. The wheel always gets out of true. The next day, mm-hmm. the wheel is out of true. And you have to tighten that this one
true.
And loosen this one to keep the mission in the center. So those are the four pieces, you know, that are intentional. You have assignment and authority, and you have accountability, and you have appreciation. And communication and community are the magic links for all of that. So awesome. That's how that happens, is through good communication and through a sense of community. And that's we call that the servant leadership wheel. So our staff are tired of that. They've heard that all the time, but it's so helpful. Patent
that. I know. Is this your thing?
I guess. I mean, it was all given to us. Let's say that.
You should start your own company, man. Call it Foundball.
Foundball.
Yeah.
That is really good.
Moonshine.
Hopefully our listeners can visualize.
Moonshine on the back of a pickup truck.
We've got a four-square diagram.
You need some whiteboard support.
Yeah. I'm going to have to map this out.
Yeah, map it out.
That's really good, guys. That's really good. Well, I want to make sure. I think you've got a 3 o'clock appointment.
Yeah, I do.
Yep.
Yeah.
I want to respect your time. Brian, Dan, this has been awesome.
Yeah, Brett, thank you.
Thank you for having me on the show. Or you guys on the show, I guess I should say.
Dude, it's been a privilege. It's been a ton of fun. Thanks for inviting me.
Literally, I'm going to listen to this probably 3 or 4 times by the end of the week. I've learned a lot, and so I know our listeners are better for this as well. So thank you, guys.
Thank you, Brett.
Appreciate it.
Hey guys, wanted to jump in here real quick and thank Jobber for their sponsorship. They are a software program that caters to guys and girls just like you in the lawn care industry. We've used them since 2012 for all of our invoices, quotes, reporting, time tracking, mapping. Their mapping feature is one of the best, as well as the fact that you can customize templates for emails, invoices, quotes. You can get paid directly through the Jobber software program. So thanks to them for their sponsorship. Hope you guys go and check them out. Go to getjobber.com/Britt-Dowd. That's BRITT-DOWD. And that's getjobber.com. So thanks for their sponsorship. Thanks for listening. We'll get back to the show.